Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring you their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Six Figure Spotlight, where we shine the light on the real stories behind business breakthroughs, bold moves, and the power of grabbing the mic and saying something that actually lands. This isn't about polished talking points or play it safe branding. This is where we dig into the grit, the strategy, and the voices rewriting the rules. Today's guest doesn't just know how to pitch. He's built an entire movement around flipping the pitch game on its head. If you've ever wondered how to get media attention without begging for it, raise capital without chasing it, and rebuild a reputation after hitting rock bottom, you're in the right place. Joining me today is Bryce North, the founder of Don't Be a Little Pitch, a PR agency with a name as bold as its strategy. Bryce is a serial entrepreneur, award-winning storyteller, and a media whisperer for the kind of brands that want real results, not vanity metrics. This is a guy who's raised over $600,000 in 90 days with zero ad spend, just storytelling and strategic PR. He's landed a $500,000 deal on Canada's Dragon's Den, scaled companies across 40 countries, and turned personal setbacks into a blueprint for unstoppable influence. Bryce brings serious experience in venture and angel capital, a long list of wins on the pitch stage, and a no-nonsense approach to using media as a growth engine. His media mastery framework is what high-growth founders are using right now to get noticed, get featured, and get ahead without selling their soul or paying to play. We're talking about the art of the comeback, the science of attention, and why most founders are pitching all wrong. So if you're tired of being overlooked and ready to get heard, Bryce is the guy who can show you how to make your story do the heavy lifting. So let's get into it. I just can't wait. Welcome to the spotlight, Bryce.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm so excited for this. Your energy, your cadence, and everything is just going to make it so much fun. So thanks for the amazing intro. And I'm just really excited to dive in.
I love it. So if you've ever seen this show before out there, if you've ever listened to it before, you know that I love to hear about someone's journey because there are clues there for all of us. When we get to see where someone started and how they ended up being the expert at what they do, it's a journey. And so before you were the media savvy founder of Don't Be a Little Pitch, and we're going to talk about that. Who is Bryce North and what lit the fuse on this chosen entrepreneurial path that you're on?
Yeah, great question. And I guess through my life, I've been building businesses or just trying to find a way to break out of this mold that I was living in. I'm initially from a small city in Canada, small enough where a lot of people don't pay attention. It's called Winnipeg in Manitoba. And some have heard of it. A lot of people have not, but also a city where it's very hard to build a business and kind of make your breakthrough. Not a lot of venture capital, not a lot of money and deal flow coming through that province and city. So I was always struggling, just build my businesses and trying the next after the next, but never really giving up, but trying to really leverage one thing that's the most important in the world is just your network. And that's the one thing I learned from the very beginning is that when you have to push through, the number one thing you need to lean on to get anywhere is the people that you know. So my process has been failure after failure of hardship of trying to build businesses within a small city where there wasn't a lot of growth capital or the network was just too small and different type of mindset. And so I pushed through and from everything from advertising tech to working in interior design, from moving into sales and launching everything kind of SaaS and IoT, I found my footing and got my experience and just learning to do it all. And initially, in the beginning, leaning on myself to get the resources so I can be resourceful to look out and to find those people to connect with, convince them that I am worth listening to, and more importantly, convince them that they can trust themselves by kind of working with me. And so my path has been all about just how do I really tell the most enlightening stories that like make people a little more captivated and a little more opening their minds and I guess their hearts and interest in what I'm going to be doing.
So if someone, a lot of people live in small towns. A lot of people don't have the same opportunity. I was born and bred in Los Angeles, so you have all those resources and it's huge. So there's a lot of places to access. But when you live in a small town or you live in another country, what advice would you give to people in those small towns? Where do you start? Because I love that you tried anything, try everything, tried anything. And that sounds like you were bold in your pursuit. And that's why I always ask the journey is that when you watch someone, how did they go about doing it? How did they expand their reach? But how did they expand their network? How did they get out there first? What would you suggest to somebody?
Make as much noise as possible, really. You've got a small community, that means that your name's probably going to get heard a lot quicker and a lot easier than being in a bigger community. But that means that you can probably speak a lot more. You can join a lot of groups. You can probably outshine a lot of people just by trying extra hard and, more importantly, putting a lot of effort behind there. So when you make enough noise in a small community, that does ripple a little bit. It doesn't extend too far, but that allows people that actually who are making the connections, who maybe heard of someone who needs your help, to expand that forward. And that's what happened with me, to the point where I was getting people asking me to speak. I was getting offers and people hearing about me without the US, within Canada as well too. And I wasn't a big name, but people really loved my perseverance. They loved my resiliency on kind of what I did. And more importantly, my rock bottom moment stories, which define us all. So I spoke a lot about that. I spoke a lot about my trajectory, my career, and like what brought me to who I am today. And that really resonated with people. So I just went out and I pitched the media, I pitched stories, I spoke everywhere I could, I volunteered, whatever option I had to talk about my business. I entered every single competition and I just made noise, and it worked out in my favor where people heard about me.
So you were fearless on the speaking route. You knew you had something to say. And for you, you're clearly an extrovert. You didn't have any trouble at all going out and getting on stage, did you?
At the very beginning, I did. I've been booed and laughed off stage and froze right on the spot. I was pretty bad when I was learning to speak, but also got pretty good at understanding how to control that. And just like shakingly nervous on stage to the point where it's embarrassing. But I call it getting calloused. And when you put yourself through like turmoil and issues and problems, moments where it's hard, you get better and better along the way. It's just you lose $1, you get used to that, you lose $100,000. After a while, a few more times, like it's a lot easier. So same thing with speaking. Same thing with like building businesses. You just get better at understanding that, how to fail faster and how to pick yourself up and put yourself through that.
I love this perspective. Fail faster. It's true. Nothing teaches you more than failure. Nothing teaches you faster than failure. Would you agree?
Yeah, there's something interesting about entrepreneurs is that we move when we're in movement. What I mean by that is that when we're actually learning, we're progressing forward. When we're failing, we're moving backwards. That's emotion. And when we're in motion, we're feeling comfortable, feel like we're learning. The scariest thing for any entrepreneur is stagnation. That's spinning our wheels. Stagnation comes from us understanding, okay, maybe what we're doing is wrong. So I'm going to try to learn something new, take a new course, go back to school, or take a new program. We feel like we're progressing because we're learning. We feel like we're moving forward because we're trying. And then we actually feel like we're actually getting somewhere because we're progressing through this course. But comes back to the push comes to shove, the very beginning again is that we are going to fail because it didn't really get us anywhere. So we're spinning again. And I think that's a big anxiety for a lot of people is that we don't know where to put our efforts, but more importantly, we're putting them in the wrong places. This isn't trying. This is just stalling by learning in a different way of actually having anxiety and stagnation. And so I think a lot of people don't necessarily put themselves out there or don't really face their failures and their fears. And they take it in a more delicate way, I should say. And some call it a way of coward. Some people call it a little more delicate. I call it in the sense that you can't actually learn the right way to go if you're constantly just trying to learn yourself and take on new courses and digest. You actually have to go and do action. You have to go and try, and you have to screw up so much where it's going to hurt.
You got to do it. But you describe the entrepreneurs so beautifully. This is my favorite group. This is why I work with them, is because there's a courage there that they have deep down to say, I can do this. I can learn it. I can do everything myself, which turns out not to be true. You do need help. That's the second stage when you realize, wow, I could do it all myself, but I'm much slower at the things I'm not good at, and I have no life anymore. That's when you start saying, I need help. I need a coach. I need some tech. I need people that do what I don't do very well. But I love how you have described this, and and you've also described like the sinkhole is that you could learn yourself to death. You could just keep learning new things, but really the key is you got to get out and do it. That was just perfect. I think that's such a helpful message to get out there. While we're talking about setbacks, because all entrepreneurs have them, I've experienced them myself, but you hit $1 million. You got $1 million in debt, and you were still moving forward. Tell us that story.
Yeah, this is my IoT project called TrapTap. We progressed so fast out of that. And the reason we got to that so much debt is because we had a lot of people invested and a lot of people like invested in money and emotion and more on the advisory side as well too. But in about 9 months, I'm quite proud about this. In 9 month time frame, I took this napkin drawing of this idea, this car tech, the safety device, and I raised about 750,000, so probably close to around $650,000 in about 30 days from a napkin drawing, and led that to a prototype to a fully manufactured device and deliver that to over 20 countries of this hardware product in 9 months. And it was quite incredible. You don't really hear about movements like this. I had a really cool team. And so we had a lot of people invested in us, not just money-wise, but also manufacturers taking risks and all of this. So we grew too quickly, too many cooks in the kitchen. Ended up us going on Dragon's Den and raising a bit of money from there. And in the end, you accumulate, and hardware is hard. And when it kind of hits hard and you don't really have the momentum behind you, you can crash quite quickly. And that's what happened with us. And we owed a lot of people a lot of money. But when, like, in the very end, money is money. Like, my favorite investor quote from Mark Hedlund is, people invest in other people. Investors don't invest in products, they invest in people. And so his quote actually is, for the investor, the product is nothing. And like, all these people that we owe this money to, like, they said, we invest in you again. So that's one thing that I can take in consideration, is that throughout our process and what we're doing, we're always trying to sell ourselves and our abilities and not the product in itself. Yeah, we lost a lot of money and a lot of people's money, and we're in debt with that there, but there's always ways out. And it's your community network that we talked about at the very beginning. That's what kind of pulls you out of the trenches.
So that's such a great story to share, because it's one thing to share. You end up owing all this money to people. That feels terrible. The project fails in whatever way it fails. If you grew too fast and you die, but how do you live with that afterwards and go on to the next thing? You seem to me to be innately courageous. Like you're fearless. You'll go after the next thing. And I think a lot of people are not in that position, but need to consider it, because if you're going to take chances, you're going to lose sometimes. Not every project's going to be a win, but every project has a benefit. Every project has a gift in it, even if it's a lesson.
Yeah, our fear is just the perception of others. That's all it is. So the question I like to ask people is, what would you do if you weren't scared? And I think a lot of people can't really answer that. And those that can or are thinking, like, I would probably take a big risk. I would maybe waste a little bit of money knowing that everything is going to be okay. Inherently, we don't want to let other people down, but we don't want to let ourselves down and have other people think negatively of us. That's why we don't put ourselves out on social media. That's why we're not courageous a lot of times. That's why we don't take big risks. It's what other people think about us. When we're rising up, there are there people to support us, whether that's real or not. And when we're failing, a lot of people disappear. Everyone's going to have something to say on both sides. You don't really have the support in the middle, but you have some sort of support on the beginning or the tail end of everything. And it makes it harder, can make it a little bit easier, but in the end, it brings a lot of judgment. And I think that's hard for a lot of people to swallow.
Where did this very healthy mindset come from? Did you develop it over time, or did you have parents that gave you this sense of self, this sense of really paying attention to yourself, and that judgment is somebody else's problem, not yours?
I just stopped getting shit. And that really came with me actually hitting rock bottom and realizing nothing changed. Like, I moved my life to a different city and I brought my business over there. And a long story short, in a span of, I think it was 12 hours, I lost my investments. My business idea got stolen. My best friend doesn't talk to me anymore, quit the company. My engineers quit. My girlfriend dumped me and my bike got stolen. I'm not lying. In 12 hours, like all that happened, and I had nothing left and no money in the city. And I had to call mom and be like, I can't get home. And this moment really made me realize that people still do care, that in the end, this didn't really matter. And what worked for me so much is that this story propelled my career and actually gave me a reason to talk and gave people a reason to trust me. And I realized that failing so hard and hitting that rock bottom was actually a huge springboard for me. So when I think about things over again, I'm like, nothing is ever going to get that bad again. So why not take the risk? Why not swing for the fences? And that's what kind of drives me to just not give a shit.
And you know what to look out for this time, that you won't repeat the whatever mistakes were made, and there are always some mistakes made, that you realize, okay, I survived that failure. Once you survive something traumatic, you can do it again. It's not quite so traumatic.
If I do it again, yeah, even if I'm dumb enough to do it again, because we all are sometimes, people just don't care. They got their own lives to worry about, and you're just like just a small moment in time that people are just going to forget about. Depends how you want to impact your life. Are you going to worry about what's going to go wrong, or are you going to keep on trying and screwing up until something goes right? I think that's the conversation we need to be having.
That's awesome. You're the epitome of that phrase. Your opinion of me is none of my business.
I like that as well too, but that's the only way to get forward.
I love that. And thank you for being so willing to share the failures up front. That's always helpful, because I think people really want to see, can you recover? If will I recover if I make a major mistake? What if I do this? And I take this chance on this thing I really believe in, and I crash and burn. And oh my God, what if I owe people after this, or they didn't believe in me, or they'll never believe in me again? I'm going to walk out of this right away. I'm going to walk out with, for the investor, the product's nothing. Boy, that's going to be on my wall. I think that's beautiful.
It's interesting when you break it down. Trust is the number one thing with investment or customers or clients, whatever it is. And I have two rules, like when I'm storytelling, or two rules when I'm like working with any brands. And it doesn't matter if this is in PR, for sales, whatever that is that number one is that people are always attracted to others' rough edges. And this transparency, this vulnerability that we need to be projecting to others creates a layer of trust, a layer of, hey, that person is just like me or gone through something similar as me. And like why this matters is that like we idolize and put our heroes on a pedestal, those that we actually look up to. So when you take a look at these heroes or these icons in our lives, so we feel like we can't relate with them. Therefore, we pull ourselves pretty far away. So it's your job as a leader or someone that wants to work with other people to humanize yourself, bring yourself down on other people's levels, and show that, hey, maybe I make more money, maybe I am a little more powerful than you, but I was in your shoes and this is how I progressed. This is that rough edges, that moment of trust that we need to be doing with everything. Some of the most successful businesses that are out there have leaders that actually show their true colors, their vulnerability, how they crashed and burned, and how they made it out of that. We relate with that. We respect that. And more importantly, we feel we can become this person, which leads into rule number two, people always buy better versions of themselves. And so that comes with a layer of trust. After that, that better version could be financial freedom. That could be a lot more authority, respect. That could just be anything in terms of better family values, whatever that is. We buy better versions of themselves based on our projections of how we see other people and our icons or our idols, but we need to relate with that first. So those are those two rules I live by, is humanization through vulnerability and transparency. Once we break down that layer of trust, we move into helping other people transcend through products and services.
This is so good. I love this. I had to write this down. It was so good. Okay, now we got to talk about business. I cannot go 1 minute longer without asking you how you came up with this brilliant name for your business. Don't be a little pitch. When I saw that, I went, okay, I got to talk to a guy that thinks like this. It doesn't pull any punches. What's the story behind the name, and what's the message you're sending with it?
You know what? Great question here. And so before this, the company was actually like an venture and angel capital company. I was helping a lot of entrepreneurs raise money. After going through like my endeavors, I got really good at going through that. I was trained by a lot of accelerators and investors to teach people how to pitch, how to get up on stage and talk. And I was helping people do that, articulate the message, raise investment. But we ran into one problem. It's that people didn't trust these new entrepreneurs or these CEOs with no notches on their belt of raising, building companies and selling them. So the one thing I did really well for myself was get myself in the media. And everyone asked, how did you raise money? How did you scale your company? I'm like, a nice way, Google me. I feel like people can trust me. And so I started helping them get into the media. And this led to me into PR. But before that, I felt like it was a very crowded world. And I was helping people pitch one time. And I wish I could say I came up with the name, but I was with a friend. And talking about my struggles of how hard it is to grow this consultancy side of things. And he said, don't be a little bitch with a B, so don't be a little bitch. And I heard it the wrong way. And I said, what? That's hilarious. And he said, no, I didn't say that, but you heard it that way. So that's what you're manifesting.
Brilliant,
And
brilliant.
I sat on that for 6 to 8 months. And I put it in like email marketing, then I took it out. And then back in, then I took it out. And I was scared to put that out there. I was scared what people are going to think about me. I was a little worried about how my image would be perceived, if I was going to get tarnished or if it's going to help me or not. And then I heard Gary Vaynerchuk, of all people, say, which I really believe to these days, I heard 10 years ago, you got to polarize people. You can't play it safe. You can't play it in the middle. If people are actually in, and he like really reams on this, if people are going to actually love you, they're going to hate you. And if they hate you, they're going to love you. These are your evangelists on the love side, people that are screaming on the rooftop of your product and your name. That's what you aim for. That's how you build a business. That's where you can raise the prices and charge what you want. With lovers, there's haters. And so why try to appease everybody? So I said, screw it. I'm going to put this out there. And I did. And I've had maybe two bad interactions. I've been asked not to speak or I can't use my company name. And that was only in the city of Winnipeg, to be honest with you. Everywhere else it worked great. But outside of that, I cannot tell you the amount of attention I get from this, from billion-dollar enterprise companies to like amazing startups and people. Personality and branding humor is absolutely everything. And that's the one thing I learned about in selling and within pitching yourself an investment is that we have to show our true colors. Like this is that vulnerability I talked about. Humor relaxes people and disarms people. And so when people hear this name and like the edginess around it, they laugh, they smile, they're a little more calm, and they're a little more at ease because it is a little cheeky. And the idea of it is you should not be a little pitch. You should be a really big person pitching yourself out there. But also, it has that pun, which I think makes everyone smile, is stop being so weak sometimes and stop being so scared and put yourself out there. So, but two-sided meaning.
You know what? I love it. I want to tell you that it caught my attention instantly. I've been in the marketing world for, oh God, 32, 34 years now, and in various formats. And I've had a lot of people pitch me. I used to be in gaming, so I took a lot of pitches from a lot of people. I'd have paid attention to this from the get-go if you'd come to me. I would have seen this and said, creative. And I like direct and edgy. Doesn't surprise me you're with Gary Vee at all. That would be someone that would be a guru because you're very direct and edgy, which I appreciate. I think it's great. So I talk about getting everybody listening to this. You have to have a, just in this short period of time, you have a real feel for Bryce North. You really have a, you definitely have a sense of you, which I think is delicious.
Like when I speak on stage, someone said to me once, you're gonna love this guy or you're gonna hate him. I'm like, oh, what an intro. And it's true, right? I think like we attract people to what we're doing based on same motives and same mentality. And I'm going for those that want to stir a little bit of trouble, want to kind of slap some people in the faces and in a really good way. And more importantly, just want to make sure they make a difference to their story. And we have to do that in certain ways to make a standout. Let's not play in the middle. Let's not be boring. Let's create a legacy that people remember.
And that's what people are looking for. You don't want to be run of the mill, or you're going to be under the tires. You're going to be under somebody's tires. So I think this is fabulous. Now, what do you find that most founders absolutely get wrong about how they show up in media? You're a PR expert. How do you feel that, what's the biggest mistake they make? And what are the biggest myths that you're constantly fighting against?
Yeah, biggest mistake is a lot of founders just don't want to make themselves the center of attention. Whether it's I don't want my ego to be up there, I don't have an ego, or this company can't scale if I'm closely attached to it. I see this a lot. I see people have this, I want to separate myself way too much from this because that's the way it needs to grow, which is completely wrong. Those are hiding behind their logos and their companies and not showing who their team is, their why, their true colors. Like we lose that connection part that we just talked about, that trust, that vulnerability. And I see the biggest issue are those are trying to be too perfect or just not visible at all. And I think the number one thing for everything else is that you need to closely associate yourself with the brand in, before we can separate. In order for us to trust a team, a VP, our employees, we need to actually trust that CEO, that founder, and trust them to have the ability to hire the right staff to make this happen. When we think of Apple, we think of Steve Jobs. When we think of Tesla, we think of Elon Musk. Whether we like them or not, Richard Branson, Virgin. Again, whether we like them or not, it's all about the fact of they're associated with the brands. They created a movement behind there, but they're not the ones that actually they're directly involved with the quality of the product right now anymore. There's a great team to make that happen. But when you think of them, they're associated. And I think that's what we need to be doing, right? And that's the biggest mistake I see from these CEOs, these founders out there from that. Problem though with marketing, the problem with PR is that a lot of times is that it just becomes so dirty. It's become a big scam out there to the point where people say PR doesn't work. I agree with you. It doesn't work, but it does work if you do it the right way. I'm going to let you know a little secret around this, around like of PR. Reporters, they don't care about what's interesting at all. They care what drives clicks. And so, why are they going to feature a brand that they think are not going to get them clicks for advertising dollars and all of that? So, those that are thinking that their story's not qualified enough, or those that are trying to go for the right big media, like you got to earn your stripes. You got to put yourself out there and prove yourself that you have a good story that you're worth listening to. So, spread that wide net, start early, start speaking, get yourself out there, and stop thinking that PR brings leads and sales because it doesn't. PR is trust generation. I do trust gen, I don't do lead gen. When you do trust gen well enough, you get enough exposure. Yeah, the sales and leads will come. The attention will be there. That's where opportunities derive from. People recognizing and seeing you, wanting to either invest, work for you, partner with you, whatever that is. But if you focus on the trust side of things, then the good things will happen. But now we're in a world where people are taking advantage of, I want to grow my business too quick, that I think majority, if not all, marketing agencies or PR agencies are big black box. We give them a bunch of money. We don't know what they're doing with it, and you're going to get scammed. And so anyone hitting you up with, we'll get you featured in a USA for $3,000 is just a big scam. That's not going to do anything for you.
It's just horrendous watching that happen. Marketing agencies can be very dangerous and predatory. And and I'm so glad to hear you say that. So what are the, so this would be a great opportunity for you to teach. It would be a great opportunity for you to show what are the questions that you should ask your marketing agency when you decide you need to go to a professional. What would you say are the top three questions they should ask that they can sift
Yeah.
through the scams?
Give me a, this is what you should be asking. Give me an example of a customer or a client relationship that went very well. Give me an example of one that did not go very well. And then tell me what the relationship was with that customer personally after both engagements. And I think this is really important because we see both sides of things like they predict that went really well or clients because everyone wants to boast their case studies to do very well. And you're going to see them if they're fumbling or if they're telling the truth or more importantly, what did not go well. But I care more about the relationships they had with those clients. And so usually what I believe is that the ones that go extremely well are probably more in a conflict than the ones that actually do not go well. Communication and connection is built in conflict. It really is. And I think that your best clients sometimes out there are your ones you're butting heads with. Have them more of a strict relationship, but also a clear indication of where you're going. And that's what I look for in a lot of people that I'm at least working with is that I want this to be a bit of a challenge. I want this to be exciting on both ends. And I want the team to be fired up and eager to want to help. Because if you're an agency, there's one thing you should be focusing on. You should be caring just as much about their business as they do. And I think a lot of agencies don't. They're looking for a quick buck. And so I think those that actually have a lot of passion and care are ones that are trying to really over-deliver. And over-deliver comes from maybe sometimes expectations not being hit in the very beginning. And so that is what I look for in the questions I ask. And on the latter side, I think you'll find out a lot of people who have poor performing clients. Everything just seems okay. No one's kind of speaking up, and like the deliverables just won't be there. There won't be a lot of communication. I think that's the red flags you want to avoid are those that are not transparent enough to tell you when things are going wrong and when you should be pulling out and blowing smoke and be like, nope, things are okay. Let's continue on through. So I think you need to be looking and trusting your gut as can this company communicate? And will they be honest with me when things are going bad? Because that's not a time to quit, that's a time to recalibrate.
I love that. What's your take on paid advertising and the pitch that so many agencies make of, oh, we've got to do Facebook ads and you need to be here and you need to be there and it'll cost you this much, and it turns out being an outrageous amount of money and it breaks a lot of entrepreneurs. A bigger company might be able to absorb that, but a small company, especially a startup, paid advertising is highly risky.
It's also hard. You got to find your own channel. So I don't do paid ads. I don't really do social media. I don't do any content. I do cold email. And so if you're asking yourself and whoever's listening to this, wait, does people actually answer cold email these days? Yeah, I would say 95% of my business comes from me sending people cold email. And so you got to find a channel that works for you. I haven't mastered paid ads. I know a lot of people who have. It's a hard game, but in the end, you have to find someone you can trust to do that and realize that the ad game is also very hard. You're probably going to get a one-to-one return, which we see a lot in studies of a dollar in will probably get you a dollar out or a bit of a loss. And so you got to figure out exactly what that looks like. But pick a channel and own it, obsess over it and become good over it. Do it yourself if you can. If not, hire someone, but then work alongside of them. But I think a lot of people spread themselves way too thin by trying to do everything, thinking, I need social, I need ads, I need this. So let me fill you in like the purpose of each platform. Whether it's Instagram, TikTok, or LinkedIn, putting content out there is not going to drive leads and people to your business. So you're asking yourself then, what's the purpose of having content on there? That is to show trust again and show dominance and intelligence. You put content on Instagram so that when you DM people, they're actually going to go to your page and say, this person knows what they're talking about. Same with LinkedIn. If you're putting a lot of content weekly, the goal is so that you have something to lean on when you're actually direct messaging people saying, I want your business. That's the purpose of that. I play on the other side in terms of PR, where if people are not Googling, if they're Googling you, they don't see anything. If they're actually going to ChatGPT or Perplexity and typing top businesses or typing your name and you're not there, that's another form of trust that's lost. I work well on conferences and speaking and cold email or cold calling, whatever that is. When somebody hears about you or organically come into your site and they Google you, if you're not there, you've lost them. So figure out the channel and the purpose for it. If ads is your game, that's really great. But I always feel like an ad says, this is why I'm great, while a review and a PR feature is saying, this is why I think they are great. And we're inherently creatures that lean on what other people have to say in order to make a decision. If that's the case, your ad dollars will do extremely well and a lot better because you're driving people to your site if that's backed by third-party reviews and testimonials and a lot of content what you're doing. So pick it, own it, obsess over it, and just become so damn good at it that you can then outsource and focus on something else.
So whatever platform you choose, you really want to be consistent and really put yourself out there, develop out the best you can on that particular channel as well.
Yeah, like we all think timing's an issue. Timing's not an issue, except if you're like Uber and Airbnb back in the day or now in an AI race. But even at that, tools are changing so fast. We all as entrepreneurs want to grow quickly. Why do we want to grow quickly? Because if we grow quickly, maybe we can get investment. Why do we want to get investment? As an entrepreneur, we're patting ourselves on our own backs, and there's no way to measure our own success. So we use certain pivotal points in our life and our career in order to measure success. That could be raising a round, hiring an X number of employees, hitting a revenue goal. All of this tells us that we're doing something right. When push comes to shove, again, when we look at it, the only thing that matters is sustainability, comfort, and the fact that you have a business that actually is not going to crumble. This is not anything to do with timing. Timing's never an issue. I'm scared my competition is going to take over. They're not. Oh, they just raised a bunch of money. Great. Now their burn has gone up by that much as well, too. Take your time. Figure out how to grow, scale with that, and then stop looking for external reasons in order to validate your own growth. I think when we take time and slow down and learn properly by experimenting and not just by digesting content, failure is the only way forward.
Let's use an example about you specifically, being the courageous guy that you are. But you raised $600,000 in 90 days with no ad spend, no gimmicks, just pure narrative power. That's really phenomenal. Share how that happened. I think people would like to know, how is that done? And I want to know, what was your thought process that was like leading up to that game plan?
You know what? So we did Kickstarter. So funding was a big component of that, but we had to tell a lot of interesting stories and work with a lot of media. So my tactic for sharing stories, whether it's cold email or talking to media, is I don't provide any value. And that kind of takes people back. We get these emails all the time. Hey, I can increase your business, or I can get you 10 leads, or I will get this much money, bring this much money for you, or grow your social accounts. These are all direct numbers of offerings that I think take us back because we sniff out the bullshit on that. What I do when it comes down to storytelling is leave the imagination open up to the person who's receiving it, whether it's a cold email, whether it's an ad, whether it's a social post, whether you're pitching to the media. Don't tell them what's going to happen. Paint a really open-ended picture of what could happen based upon what they're looking for. And not to sound vague, it's we do this and imagine what could happen if X, Y, and Z happens. And so I think when we take this type of approach, we open up a lot of doors and we build a lot of relationships. That's what we did. I wasn't aiming for media. I was aiming for conversations. Conversations allow us to build trust. Trust allows us to ask the questions, the important questions of what are you writing about? What's interesting for you? So instead of shoving ideas down these reporters' throats about like why this product is great, I never really pitched the product. I just pitched the story, the reason, the heart, and more importantly, like the why behind all of this. And then sometimes you get a really interesting story of not or a reporter saying, we're not focusing on that at all. That's not important. What we're doing is talking about this. We're not doing like I was doing safety and automotive and IoT tech. So, no, we're not doing hardware or entrepreneurship anymore. No. What we're doing is actual like marketing spend. I'm like, we spent this much money on this before and failed. And like, that's really cool. Tell me about your story. So there are different avenues, storylines, I like to call them, that makes you an expert in many different fields. This is a different funnel, a different line of business, a different way to get speaking opportunities and trust. And so I got pretty good at just doing one thing everyone sucks at doing, I think, is talking to your customers or just asking people questions and stop trying to sell people. And I think a lot comes that way when you're just authentically curious. And that drove a lot of stories for us and got us some really big hits and a lot of reporter pickup.
How important is relationship with reporters versus coming in cold with a great storyline, with a great story to tell?
Not important at all. After, I think it's important. So this is a really funny part because everyone wants to hire a PR agency because they have relationships. Newsflash for you, it doesn't matter. Just because I got friends in the media doesn't mean they're going to cover you. It doesn't work like that. They have to find a story that fits. Every client we work for, yes, we have relationships. And yes, a lot of time we make intros to like to ourselves, but we work with every brand, inject ourselves into their brand itself, start from scratch and build these relationships. Make them a leaning source for kind of what we're doing here. And that's what's extremely important through all of this is that we become a source for them and we build relationships with the media from scratch so they can lean on them over and over again. No, if you got an interesting pitch and a reason and a story to tell and it's captivating and engaging, you don't need to have the biggest connections. You just got to be really damn good at opening their eyes and make them see the vision.
So telling the story is so powerful because whether the guy knows you or not, the reporter, whether they know you or not, they're looking for clicks. They're looking for attention. So your story has to matter, not you. Your story has to matter because that's what's sellable and that's what gets them. It's like speaking on stage, okay? You need to make the event planner happy. The event planner's got a job. The event planner is got to put people on the stage. That's what keeps them in the game. So you really need to satisfy the event planner and hear the needs of the event planner. Same thing with the reporters and the papers. You have to satisfy what they need to accomplish. It's another way of
Dude,
looking at
that's
it,
it.
right?
Just ask questions. What are you writing about? What are you doing? How can I be a source and a help for you? And
Love that.
everyone is just a little more greedy on this is what I need instead of actually asking this is what you need. And I think that's an issue for a lot of people launching products too. We don't do the hardest thing out there is talk to our customers. And a lot of us want to do the easier thing of building before we sell, but if you have a new idea, you should be selling it the day you have the idea, like my napkin drawing. You should be pitching it to people, talking to everyone, trying to raise money from that just to get on people's radars. A lot of people love first mover advantage and will love to buy new products or maybe sign up, but you should test the validity of these ideas by pitching and trying to sell them. Every new idea I'd come up with, I'd just launch a web page and I would run ads to it just to see if people would click and buy. If they bought it, then I just would refund them, like, oh, sorry, manufacturing issues. But I mean, this proves validity through all of this. And so, why spend so much money and time designing something that nobody wants when we can do the scariest thing for everyone out there is having a conversation and maybe getting rejected, because we can learn a lot from these moments where people say no.
Just such a simple strategy and yet brilliant, and most people don't take this path. Is this why you created the Media Mastery Framework?
I did, because I believe that media is more than just a mention. And those that are press dealers and offering you fame and fortune by getting featured some way doesn't really work. And so we created this framework that brings a lot of organic attention by doing things the right way. That's more than just features. It's podcast appearances. It's speaking opportunities. It's awards and eBooks to everything for business directories. Presence is powerful, and that comes with having visibility on places like Google, or now search engines, or AI search engines like ChatGPT and Perplexity, for example. And so this media mastery framework really takes a look at what's your media authority score? Like, how are you actually presenting in the media right now, and compared to your competitors, and what's trending? We can give you this score that we developed internally. It was proprietary, but it actually allows us to understand if you're ranked here, we know that maybe if you want to be featured in Forbes, usually a score like this will get you there. So we cast a wide net, set a ground and a foundation, and build you up along the way. And that foundation, number one, is extremely important, because we get into the why, we get into what you built before, we get into your mission behind this all, your story, and a little bit of the company story. Will this bring in leads or sales or attention? No, it's not designed to. Will this get you anything in terms of ROI or people coming to you? No. So why is it important? Because it allows step two to happen. In order for us to actually sell and be champions and heroes in the space, we don't sell ourselves, we sell the journeys of other people. And so at this point, what we do is that we go and start promoting your customers, their journeys, their transformations, their transcendence of using your product, and what happened when before they started using your product or service, and afterwards. These are customer journeys that we feature in the media. They look like the heroes. They get brought up in the media. Their story is out there. They get excited about that. And you're just the awesome sidekick along the way that's helping support their journey. We do that enough times, tie that into your cultural independence, like why your company culture matters, why your employees, your team embodies this. We do that together. We see bigger interviews. We see great podcasts. So why does this matter? Rule number one, we're attracted to others' rough edges. Another great way to connect with people is through other stories. But when people see this, they connect. They realize that, hey, I've gone through that, that this happened to me too. But then they're going to go and Google you. And that's why stage one is so important. You have that authority, you have that influence there, so that when we are actually telling the connection stories, the ones that resonate with people, you have merit and they believe you. From there, we start seeing a lot bigger features along the way. We start winning awards, getting to business directories. We start seeing syndications on Google. We see Google knowledge panels pop up. If you know what that is, I recommend Googling, let's say, Elon Musk, because we use his name. You'll see these big panels everywhere and all his features, and then Google your name. Maybe there's not going to be something there, but you don't have to be a celebrity to get that. Things syndicate and grow when you stack properly. Media is not an overnight thing. It doesn't take years. It can take months. Sometimes I've seen as little as weeks. But the important part is that you need an influence that people can lean on, and more importantly, trust. And like I said from the beginning, I do trust Jen. I sometimes maybe don't bring you to the party, but I damn well make sure that when you're there, they're listening and they're going to want to work with you because they've heard of you before, or they're going to search you and believe that, hell yeah, this person knows what they're doing.
How people get access to this fabulous media mastery framework?
Yeah, absolutely. Having a call with us and a chat with us is the most important part. You can go to our website. It's not hard to find, don'tbelittlebitch.com, and learn a little bit more. But we post a lot on our LinkedIn about this as well too, and just call out the BS of the industry. We have a name that kind of offends people a lot of times before we open our mouths, and I'm proud of that. But at the same time, we try to debunk the industry, what's going on, and make fun of those that are trying to scam people. So it's a little more entertaining that way.
It's an interesting point to make because, and again, I feel really protective of entrepreneurs. They usually don't have a huge budget to work with, and they get excited by people who are great at selling what they do. But I would say to you, vet these people, ask the right questions before you get caught up in some kind of marketing scam, and then people get burnt. The coaching business can be the same. The public speaking business can be the same. You have to be careful. The thing about Bryce and why I was so excited to have him here is that you get what you get with him. He is direct, he's edgy, he's honest, he has a really good reputation. He's no holds barred, and he's not for everybody. But he's for the right person. He is for the right group that wants it straight up. Gary Vee, I totally, it does not surprise me at all that you relate, that resonates for you, because, and boy, talk about successful. You've been very successful, and I'm really pleased for you. I think you've been really powerful. Now tell me, what do you want your legacy to be? You've tried so many things. You've been fearless in life. Nothing really knocks you down for long. You just keep getting back up again. I want to know, what do you want your legacy to be?
I don't know. And I'm okay with that because the fact that I'm constantly searching and exploring allows me to learn, trying different things and keep pushing. I don't want that legacy to end. And I think maybe one day I'll have a clear indication of how I'm going to give back. Maybe I'll turn this into a charitable component. Maybe I'll do something like bigger than myself in this role. But I don't think I'm close to getting there yet. I haven't built my network to the size I want to be. I haven't inspired people enough through storytelling. And I'm currently traveling the world doing that. I built a business that allows me to travel and be anywhere in the world and have a remote team, but I'm collecting stories. That's the most important part is cultures. Everyone's different. Movements and companies are different around the world. And I think right now, as I progress through this, I want to learn a little more about what makes me and what resonates with people in terms of that. So when the time comes, I think I'll have enough in my network, enough supporting me to actually make this legacy happen. So I'm just as excited as maybe the next person to find what that's going to be.
Well, you've proven you're really on an adventure. This life is a very adventurous life for you, and you are fearless in going out and trying things and being willing to fail and getting comfortable with failure. What do they say? Being successful is getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. And you are exemplary in that space. I love your truth bombs. I love that you are out there. It's wonderful when I get someone online and say, "Listen, do I have a tight framework that I have to work with?" And you're in Vienna talking to me at 11 o'clock at night. And I think, you're having a ball. I can tell already. You're just having a ball in life. And what are you fired up most about right now? Right now, what's the next big thing or the next exciting thing that you can't wait to do
I'm
tomorrow? Because
actually
that's what it's
building,
like for you.
aside from travel and where I am in the part of the world right now, on like a business side thing, I think that's firing me up the most is I want to build this framework, everything that we're doing into a software platform. And we're doing that right now. I want to make it easy for people to understand how they're perceived online and how we can gamify and make it a lot easier for them to grow themselves without the scams and the bullshit out there, just by purely understanding what everyone else is doing and what they need to do to ladder and move up. So that's getting me excited. I love when people come to calls and they're bitter and they hate agencies because I'll win them over right then and there just because I can relate with them. I've hired bad agencies before. And once they see how we do things and how it's opening up, like it opens up my eyes a lot more that there's movement behind this space of actually just making it pretty clear on how, like, marketing should be easy. Like, it should be clear why and what we're doing in this. And if it's complicated, run. And I think that that's excites me the most is how do I simplify this so much that anyone can do it, put it into a way that makes us all successful, and more importantly, allows us to scale and reach more people. Because I'm the only salesperson on this team. I can only reach so many people. So I want to impact more. And that's what fires me up the most.
That's a great way to end this interview and getting to see where you're going. I have no doubt about it. You are so right about getting it, simplifying it, getting it down to something a little bit more manageable, because the more tools that are out there, the more touch that we have, the more reach that we have, it gets complicated. And the best people are the ones that are most successful, are the ones that are able to simplify it. So it's a more manageable process, I think. And you don't have to break the bank. You don't have to sell your soul. So thank you so much for coming on and showing us what real PR power looks like. It's no gatekeeping, no fluff. It's just straight strategy and storytelling that's got teeth. And I think that's what our audience really wants to hear.
I thank you so much for having me and allow me to talk about this. I think the world needs to slap those scammers in the face and take a step back, but always trust your gut. I think that's one thing we can always live by. So thank you again.
I know you live by that. And I love that. I think it's people ought to trust their intuition a lot more. Sometimes you need to turn off the computer, turn off the phone, and figure out what you think about it. Figure out what matters to you. Sometimes we're listening too much to other people, and you need to get with your own soul and figure out what it is that you really want. I love how you broke down PR and what it really takes to go from ignored to unforgettable. And thank you for sharing about public speaking. It's an important platform. It's really a force multiplier. I think that's powerful. And speaking isn't about the spotlight. It's really about leverage, the same way social media is as well. Whether you're on Dragon's Den and whether you're pitching a client, the way you show up and the way you speak changes everything. And I can see that the storytelling on your side and what you've been through is highly relatable. And I think it gets people's attention. So that was a gift. If you want to get seen and heard and actually remembered, check out Bryce's agency, Don't Be a Little Pitch. And it's at don'tbealittlepitch.com. He made it very simple. You'll never forget that. I won't. He's not selling a course. He's really handing you a real playbook through his mastery, media mastery framework. Believe me, it's worth paying attention to. It'll enthuse you, it'll empower you on how to approach that much needed PR element that you need for your company to succeed, and that you don't have to go necessarily outside to get it. You could do some of this inside and get with the right person who's not going to bleed you to death. I'm sorry, but Bryce and I are pretty aware of the scammers that are out there. Don't get caught. Don't get caught in the net. It's important. This episode is, as all of them, they're about public speaking, whether it's on a podcast like this, whether it's on a stage or during a pitch. It isn't a nice to have. It's your sharpest tool when it comes to building trust and driving growth and owning your message before somebody else does. So, to everyone tuning in, thank you for being here. If you like this, please share the episode. I love you connecting us with other people. That's beautiful. I always really appreciate it. And we want to hear how you're using your voice to create momentum. So, send us your feedback. It really fuels the show. I get excited about it. And we're here to show you how powerful public speaking can be, not just for building a brand, but for building authority and credibility and real lasting impact. And I think Bryce has really brought it home today. It's about trust. It's about building trust. Be real. Get out there and tell your story. If you need help telling your story, if you need help creating a brilliant way of presenting it, Bryce is the person to contact. I think he knows how to do that really well. And very directly, he's the guy. And with that said, Bryce, thank you for being here. And thanks to the audience for being here. And as always, I look forward to our next conversation. And I'll see you all next time.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and hard-earned, time-tested wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. And that's what it's all about. If you found value in today's episode, let us know. And I hope you'll take a moment and subscribe to The Spotlight wherever you listen to your podcasts so you never miss a thought-provoking or idea-producing conversation. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and I can't wait to see you back here for the next episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.